here back in Genesis. And I believe we're in chapter 31. Somewhere around verse 40. Because somebody brung their notes and they got it marked. So here we are. We talked about him with his family. He left Laban. And he's headed back to Canaan, and he's heading back to Beersheba, where his daddy lives. Possibly his mom's already passed on at this time. He's been 20 years with Laban. He started out on his journey to go get these wives when he was 77, so now he's at least 97. For those of y'all keeping up with his age, he's 97 hereabouts now. And so we see him in about verse 40 says, "Thus I was in the days of the drought, consumed me, and the frost at night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes." In other words, I was out there when it was freezing cold. I was out there when it was really hot. And guess what, Laban? You didn't send no wood pile out there to where I was at. You didn't send no extra blankets and clothes out there where I was. In fact, probably you wouldn't have cared less if I'd have froze to death out there. But during that freezing nights, I stayed out there and stayed awake and watched them sheep. During them hot, sweltering days when I couldn't hardly breathe and it was so hot I couldn't stand it, I stayed out there and watched them sheep. I kept my eye on them sheep. And every time you lost a sheep or one come up missing, no matter what the reason was, I figured out a way to pay you back for that sheep. He says, "Laban, I was out there. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. In other words, every time I turned around, you changed the... If God was blessing me this way, you try to figure out where you get that, and you make my blessing something else, so maybe I wouldn't get it, and God would turn around and bless me on that side too. So if it was the ring straight, God bless me. If it was the speckled, God bless me. If it was the brown ones, God bless me." And every time God was blessing me, every time they'd have little baby ones come around, you'd come up to me and say, "I think we need to change this deal to this or change it to that." 10 times he messed with his wages. 10 times he messed with... Now, 10 could mean a bunch, or it couldn't mean exactly 10. But either way, if you take the wives, then you take the other wife, and then you take the sheep, that's 3 changes right there. And then he says, "As I was out there doing these things, every time God was blessing me, you kept getting madder and madder and madder, kept trying to change things out on me." He says, "Thus have I been with you 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for the cattle, and thou hast changed my wages, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God hath seen my affliction and my labor and my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight." In other words, if it hadn't have been for you knowing that my grandfather had a God of gods, my father had a fear of that same God is my God, the one who's been blessing me, and had you not feared them, you'd have probably left me without anything. You'd have probably stole it all, took it all back. Because just the other night when he showed up to you in a dream, he says, "Don't you talk good or bad to him. Don't you mess with him. Don't you do anything you ain't supposed to do to him. I am blessing him. I'm taking care of him." He said, "Yesternight he rebuked thee." That God did. Not the one you got the little statues for and the ones you was back at home that you worship, but the God rebuked you, the holy God, the living God. He said, "If it hadn't have been for that, you'd have left me go now empty. You'd have took these girls back, you'd have took these youngins back, and you'd have took all these animals back, and you'd left me sitting right here in the desert right here all alone, and that's where you would have left it, if they'd even left him alive." And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters." Wow, all of a sudden he just loves them to death. He sold them to Jacob. And now he said, "But these are my daughters, and I love them so much, and these are, you know, they're my babies. These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children." In other words, these are my grandchildren. These are my heritage. These are my family. And these cattle are my cattle. And that technically, they were his cattle, but God took his cattle through the arrangement that he made, and he stole them all away. Well, he didn't steal them all away. He just made it happen where all those cattle become Jacob's cattle. Yeah, they came from your cattle, but your cattle are all white. If we had somebody come up and look and say, well, there ain't no way that those cattle and these cattle are the same cattle, because your cattle were all perfectly white, spotless, blemishless, and all my cattle are brown and speckled and ring-straked and you name it over here. These are my cattle, healthy and fat too. It says here, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. In other words, if you look out there, everything you got, Jacob, was mine. Well, technically it was, but through your wheeling and dealing, it no longer is. It says, these are mine. And what can I do this day unto my daughters? In other words, if I do something against them, if I do something bad against them, only first I'm going to hurt is my children, because everything that's here belongs to them. Because Jacob, you've done put them all where they own it all. It's all theirs. In fact, when you took them, all these children belong to them. All the maidservants belong to them. All the sheep belong to them. What can I do to them but hurt my own family if I do something to you? He said, what can I do now? He says, seest, it's mine, and what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto thy children which you have born? Now therefore, come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. In other words, right now, let's make us a covenant. Because he knows how he's been sort of tricking him and messing with him and everything else. He started thinking, you're bigger than me. Just like back when Isaac was with that king, you've done the God bigger than me. And maybe I need to make a covenant with you so you don't decide one day to come back and get back at me for what I've been doing to you. So let's make a covenant between me and you. He was already on the losing end of the stick anyways. He needed to make a covenant. He said, let's make a covenant between me and you. A witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone, and he set up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And that's probably his working men, not his sons. Gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap, and they did eat thereupon. So in other words, they got them a big old pile of stones, set them up, and then all the other guys grabbed their stones and set up, and they made a makeshift like big table out there where they could eat. And he says, where they could eat. And he made a big heap of them upon, and Laban called it, whoa, what a name, Jagershaduthah. No, I ain't saying that twice. And Jacob called his Galeed. I like that one. Which both mean a witness. One is in Syriac or Syrian, and it means witness, or this is against you, or a thing against you. And Galeed means this is a tower or a watchtower as a witness against you. So they set this thing up, and they set these rocks up as a witness between the two of them. And of course, God being there to be the witness also. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee. In other words, Lord's watching us. Lord is looking on us. The Lord is paying attention to us. When we are absent one from another. In other words, when we part, the Lord's going to keep an eye that you don't come after me. And he's going to keep an eye that I don't come after you. And the Lord's going to watch between us that we keep this covenant, that we watch, that he watches us to protect us from each other. So it says here, if thou shalt afflict my daughters. Now, he's been living with these girls for 20 years. Well, he's been around them for 20 years. And never once does it look like he ever raised his hand to one of these girls. Never once does it seem like he ever raised his hand to one of these girls. But he says now, when they're making this covenant, he says, if thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness between us. In other words, nobody hears what me and you are talking about. Nobody knows what me and you are talking about other than God. He says, if you afflict my daughters, if you raise a hand to them, if you hurt one of them, if you do damage to one of them, or if you bring another wife into the family with them. Now, this is pre-Levitical law, but still, he already has four wives. And I guess Laban's protecting their heritage. He says, no other wives. Four is plenty. You got four wives. You got two wives and two concubines. No other strange wives come into this family relationship. He says, and at 97, Jacob's probably saying, that's fine with me. If they afflict them daughters, no man being our witness, God being witness between thee and me. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, talking about the rocks, the pillars that were stood there. Behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. In other words, they both had their rocks there, they both had the pillar there, they both had the witness there. And this heap is between his witness, and these pillars be witness that I will not pass over this heap unto thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap of this pillar unto me for harm. In other words, from here on out, you're never going to go back this way, not for harm. If you come in to visit, it's got to be in peace. And I'm never going to come across this, I'll never cross this pillar again unless it's in peace. I will never come in war, I will never come in violence, I will never come with revenge. We will never cross this pillar in either direction for violence or anger against each other. So he says, we'll never go there. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their fathers, judge betwixt us. Now, that's not God our Father and God our Father here. That's God our Father and the idol that Nahor and they witnessed over there when they were in the Ur of Chaldees. So it says here, these two be a witness. Well, probably Laban figured his God still had a little bit of power. So he said, my God's witness with your God, so we're all witnesses together here. But we know which God kept it all held together. We know which God was in charge of these things. And he says, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us and Japheth, swear by the fear of his father Isaac, the Lord Almighty. And Jacob offered sacrifices upon this mount, on the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread. Now, this is not a religious sacrifice. This is just a feast sacrifice, or let's all get together and we made this covenant together. We're all in agreement with this thing. Your bunch comes over and our bunch comes over. We're going to eat. We're going to consummate this agreement, and then we're going to part ways. So this was not like he took a thing and worshiped God out here, although he does worship God. But with the heathen there, you can't bring non-believers into a religious sacrifice back then. So there's no way that this was a religious sacrifice. It was just a barbecue sacrifice or a get-together sacrifice or a covenant sacrifice between two guys getting along together. And he says, then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain. He called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread, and they tarried all night in the mountain. When they threw the barbecue, they stayed up late. I can't do that no more. I can remember days when I could, but those were pre-Christian days. I couldn't stay up all night and have a barbecue if I had to. I'd have to kick out on one of these stools somewhere and go to sleep. Y'all party on all night, I don't care, but I got to go to bed. But it says, and they stayed up all night in the mount. They must have been a lot tougher than we are, because they are 97 years old, staying up all night having a party. What can I say? And early in the morning, and they got up early in the morning after they partied all night. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. So they partied all night. They made a covenant. He came to get his idols, his false idols, which was always the most angry thing about him. And after it was all over with, he didn't find his false idols. But they made a covenant between each other that one would not attack the other one. One would not hurt the other one. And Laban goes back and he still ain't got his idols. Because these idols, we're going to catch these idols up again later on. But he still hasn't got his idols, and Rachel's still packing them around for some reason. We'll get to that on another job, but here we are. Then it says, and Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. I never saw that S till this week. I always thought the angel, I just said the angel of God met him. I was thinking one angel. But it says here, the angels of God met him. And this might have been like when Elijah was up on the mountain and his friend says, "We're all alone, what are we going to do?" And he says, "Don't you see them all? They're everywhere." But these angels were there. It says, angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." Uh-oh. There ain't just two of them. There's an army of them. There's an army of angels here. "This is God's host." And he called the name of the place Mahanaim, which means two hosts. In other words, while he's going where he's going, and he wakes up, sees these angels, when he looks to his right, there's a big old pile of angels. And when he looks off to his left, there's a big old pile of angels. He is surrounded by an army or two hosts of angels as he's going through his travels here. And he's got them for protection. Because God, remember back way back at Bethel, says, "I will protect you. I'll be with you. Wherever you're going, I'll be right beside you." And all of a sudden, he's beginning to realize, man, God is with me. God's taking care of me. He says, and Jacob saw them and he says, "This is God's host. This is God's angels. This is God's army." And he called the name of the place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir in the country of Edom. Now, he didn't send none of these angels. These angels were not under his power to lead, tell, go anywhere. But he took some of his servants and he says, "I want you to go see Esau. I want you to go tell Esau I'm coming. I want you to tell Esau I'm coming in peace. I'm tell Esau that I want to see him." He says, he sent messages before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir in the country of Edom, which is that named after the red pottage that he ate. And he says, "Go to the land of Edom." And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall ye speak to my Lord." In other words, give him reverence. Let him say, show that we respect him. Show that we understand he has got some power, some strength. "Go and tell Esau my Lord, the servant Jacob." And he makes sure we understand he's calling himself a servant. So he's trying to make Esau feel bigger. And he's trying to help himself look littler or more humble. And in case Esau might be still a little bit mad that way, that he's trying to make Esau feel a little bit better in the way he words this thing. So he says, "Go tell my, speak to my Lord Esau, the servant Jacob saith, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now." In other words, it's time for me to go back home. It's been 20 years. Look, I'd like to come through the land, but on the way through, I'd like to see you, brother. I'd like to shake your hand. I'd like to have company with you. Maybe we could have a barbecue, a cookout, maybe a little something going on. You know, talk about old times or something like that. He says, and he commanded them that they would do that and did it. And he says, "And I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and woman servants. I have sent to tell thee, my Lord, that I may find grace in thy sight." In other words, I'm not coming here broke and crippled, but I'm not trying to be a burden on you. I'm not coming back with my tail tucked between my legs trying to say, "Help me, help me, help me." But I want you to understand, I'm still your servant, but I'm not broke and I'm not helpless, and I don't need you to take care of me. On the other hand, I'm not trying to take advantage of you either. He says, "I have all these things with me, and I want to find grace in thy sight." In other words, let me, if I may, find grace. Let bygones be bygones. Let's get back to being brothers and get along here. And he says, and the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh." That sounds pretty good at first. "Why, well, he's going to come hug my neck and shake my hand and tell me how much he loves me." And then he says, "And he cometh to meet thee with 400 men with him." Uh-oh. Now, is he coming to help me up and help me get my cattle? He's coming to make sure I don't get lost. He's coming to protect me. 400 men seems a little bit much for a friendly get-together. So my brother Esau is coming and he's got 400 men with him. All of a sudden, Jacob's sitting here, oops. He might still be mad. I don't know. He could still be angry. I don't know. What am I going to do? And he starts that worrying thing like us Christians always do. We always worry about something we don't need to worry about. Because most of the stuff we worry about never happens anyways. It just don't happen. He says here, oh boy, and he comes with 400 men with him. And Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that was with him, the flocks and the herds and the camels and the into two bands. In other words, he took all of them and divided them out in little bitty portions and made two caravan-like groups out of them. And he said, if Esau come to one company and smite it, in other words, we're going to separate us far enough apart that if he jumps on one, we'll see what's happening. Maybe we could run away. Or if he jumps on the other one, maybe the other one can run away. But you got to realize with all those cows and goats and camels and sheep and everything, got, he'd have to leave all that behind if he's going to run away, because there ain't no way they could run as fast as he could. So even that idea would end up getting him half his people killed and half his stuff killed. He says, if he come in one company and smite it, then the one company which is left shall escape. In other words, maybe some of us could get away if that's what his plan is. We're going to divide us up. We're going to separate us far enough apart. I can just see what's happened over at yours, and you can just see what's happened over at mine. So that way, if I see him jump on y'all, I'm over to heel and out of here. Or vice versa. And Jacob. Now, right here, Jacob's going to pray. I don't know if y'all ever caught this. Right here, the next couple of three verses, Jacob's going to pray. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham. That's a good place to start. And God of my father Isaac. The Lord which saith unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal with thee. First of all, he starts out, Lord, I'm acknowledging who you are. I'm acknowledging and reverencing you for being higher and stronger and mightier than anything. But I also want you to remember, I remember that you made me a promise. We need to remember these promises too and pray them back out back to God too. He says, and remember, you said, you told me, he says, return to my country and thy kindred, and I will deal with thee, deal there with thee. In other words, I'm expected to get all the way to where I'm going. Just like those guys in the boat, and he says, go to the other side. They're sitting in the middle paddling. And Jesus says, I told y'all to go to the other side. When he steps in the boat, there it does. Because when Jesus says you're going to the other side, you're going to the other side. And just like he made this promise, I will be with thee. I will deal with thee. I will get you to the end. Jacob is now saying, well, you told me that I'm going to go all the way to my daddy's house. I ain't made it past Esau yet. I just barely got past Laban, but I ain't made it past Esau yet. And you promised me that I'd get there. And then he says, I am not worthy. Uh-oh, he's done got humble pie. He's always been humble, but he's showing us where we need to be humble. When we go to God the Father, I'm not worthy. I didn't deserve what I got. I shouldn't have had what I got. I'm not worthy of the least of all these mercies. Never was. And of a truth. And thou hast showed unto me thy servant, for with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and am now become two bands. In other words, when I went that away, all I had was a staff and a little bottle of oil, if you remember right. And that's what I went to get two brides with and all these cattle. All I had was a staff, whether it be a shepherd's staff or a walking staff. All he had was this one staff. He said, when I left here empty. And now, I've got just what you promised. I've got wives. I've got children. I've got cattle. You have blessed me and built me up. You have growed me into something that I wasn't. He said, I have become two bands, and he's divided them here. And then he says, deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him. And technically, he still had a right to fear Esau, but on the other hand, God has done said, I'm going to bring you all the way through. But that's the way we are too. We understand God's going to take us all the way through this thing, and yet we still worry about things and worry about fear and worry about getting sick and everything else that goes on. He says, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me. And not just him, but he's worried about the mother and the children. He's worried about this man totally wiping out the whole bunch. He says, it's one thing if he kills me, but he's going to kill the mother, he's going to kill the children, he's going to kill the heritage. You told me my children would be more than the sands of the sea, and if he comes right now, he will kill them all right here, and that won't take place. But wait, God, you promised me that they're going to grow and become more than the sands of the sea. You promised me you're going to bring me all the way to where Isaac's at. You promised me you're going to take me all the way through. So he's praying back to him in a humble manner. He said, Lord, I'm scared to death, but I know what you promised me. And I'm counting on that promise that you made to me. And I'm laying this promise back at you. For one thing, I know that you never change your mind. Hello? For another thing, that you're the strongest God there is in the world. Nobody can whip you. And thirdly, he always keeps his word. God cannot lie. So, if God has made you promises, and you're scared to death because something's happening, and you can say, well, wait a minute, the promise wasn't for me to stay here. The promise was for me to get over there. I ain't worried about that alligator or that snake or that lizard that's right yonder. I'm going to just keep God at his promises. We're going to keep on going here. And thou saidest, he's still praying, I will surely do thee good. Well, doing thee good means I can't be killed by Esau, right? He says, thou surely said that thou will do me good and make thy seed as the sands of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Lord, this is what you promised me. That's the way we should pray sometime. We should get down, acknowledge him for how great he is, and then remind him of all the promises. Not that we need to remind him of the promises, that will remind us of the promises. That we'll remember, here's what God has said to us. Here's what God has said he's going to bring us to. Here's what God has said he's going to give us. We pray these things back. We may pray them out loud, we may pray them silently, but when we pray them, it's for us. Because he's strengthening himself and reminding himself, God, you have said this. You don't change your mind. You don't lie. You keep all your promises. And you told me that my children are going to be like a multitude. Right now, I don't see but 13 kids out there. So that means that some more stuff's got to be taking place. This ain't going to end tonight. This ain't going to end tomorrow when I see Esau. He says, and he lodged there that night, that same night. And he took of that which came to his hand and presented it to Esau, his brother. In other words, he says, all right, I'm going to take... I prayed to God. I've told God about the promises. I've asked God to protect me. I've told him about all the things he said he was going to do. Now, just in the humanness of me, I'm going to... never hurts to do a little bit on our own here. We put little feet to our prayers. In the humanness of me, I'm going to take some of my flock and I'm going to divide it into portions. And I'm going to send presents to Esau. And as we see this thing going on, he's going to send a few and then spread them out. And he's going to send a few and he's going to spread them out. So that way, as Esau's coming, he'll run into a little bit here. And he'll say, what's going on? And we're going to get to that in a minute. And then he'll run into the next batch and he'll say, what's going on? So let's go there. And he says, and he made presents for his brother Esau. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats. And 200 ewes and 20 rams. So he takes this, and some people think he's made it into three herds, but I'm kind of notion of the people that believe it's five herds, because he makes a five herd thing here. And he says he takes those. And then he says he takes 30 milch camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she asses and 10 foal, and he delivers them into the hands of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto their servants, pass over before me and put a space between drove and drove. So first of all, he's got the sheep coming. And he's got the goats, and he's got the sheep separated, and he's got all the sheep going. He had 200 sheep, and then he had 20 he-goats. And then he had 200 ewes and 20 rams. So he's got them separated and they're on their way. But he puts enough distance between them that when Esau stops to talk to this herder at the front, he has to take a few minutes to figure out what's going on and see what's happening. And then by the time he gets to the next one, he's going to stop. What's all this? And so the time he gets through five of them things, and each time, each one of these guys is going to say, these are from our master Jacob, and they're a present for you. And Jacob is still coming. Now, if they said, now Jacob has went some other way, he'd say, oh, I'm being tricked.
Yeah.
I'm being fooled. But they kept saying, but Jacob is still coming. He's going to meet you here in a little while. But until then, these are just presents for you, Esau. So it says here, and he commanded the foremost, saying, the first one going out, when Esau my brother meets thee, and asks thee, saying, whose art thou? And whither goest thou? And whose art these before thee? In other words, he's going to give him the interrogation. He's going to say, what's going on with all these sheep? Why aren't you with the big herd or whatever? Because I know you're bound to have a big herd somewhere. What's the deal here? And it says, and thou shalt say, when they be thy servant Jacob's, it is a present sent to my lord, making sure we show a little reverence, like pump him up a little bit, my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. In other words, he ain't slipped out the back door, he ain't trying to go around the hill while you're looking at all this. He said, and besides that, Esau, he's coming still. So these sheep, this first little herd, these are all yours, Esau. This is a present to make you, to let you know that Jacob is coming. He's coming to visit. He wants to see you. He wants to be friends with you. And then he says, and moreover, did I get there yet? And he commanded a second. And he said, and the third, that they follow in the drove and on the same manner, and they speak to Esau when they find him. In other words, every single drove, all the way up to five of them, the same message. These are your present for you. These are a gift for you. And behold, our master Jacob is coming. In other words, he's still coming. There may be more gifts coming. I don't know. But right now, every time you meet something, this has been a gift to you, and Jacob is coming. And they say, moreover, behold, my servant Jacob is behind us. And he said, for he said, I will appease him. And maybe he's talking to himself here. He may have said it out loud. I will appease him with the presence that goeth before me, and after I will see his face peradventure, he will accept me. In other words, well, he's already asked God for help. He's already asked God to move on hearts and do things like that, and he's told God about the promise he's made, and now he said, it won't hurt. God has blessed me with this big old herd here. It won't hurt for me to use some of these in a human manner as a peace offering to break the ice here. So we got God working, I'm working, we're both working, that Esau will be appeased and be friendly towards us. Peradventure, he will accept me because of the gifts and the things that we are doing here. So, went the presence over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. So now he's got, that night he sends these out. Just before dark or whatever, you get these herds going out, and then he stays behind that night. And it says here, as he's doing that, he's a pretty busy fella getting all these things put together. He says, and he rose up that night, and he took his two wives and his two woman servants and his 11 sons and passed over the brook Jabbok, the ford of Jabbok. So in other words, he takes his wives, and he puts them separated just like he did the sheep and everything else. So he takes probably the maid servants and puts them in the front, and then he's got the next wife, and then he's got Rachel. He got Leah and then Rachel, and the children probably divided up sort of like the same way. And all that going on down there, he says, and he sends them on. And they're slowly making their little trip towards Esau and what's going on. And right now we're saying, man, that Jacob is a coward. He done let everybody go but him. He's done sent everybody out. He's sitting back here by the brook Jabbok still. But he's got a fight fixing to happen. I don't think we're going to get to that fight tonight. I don't think we're going to get there. But it's got a lot to do with praying more than I thought it did. So we're going to, don't miss next week. Tune into these same stations because it's going to get good. But anyways, so he stayed there, but and he set his wives on ahead, and they crossed over the ford of Jabbok. And as ford means, most of y'all understand, a ford is a place where the river either gets narrower or calmer or whatever and shallower, where people could cross without hazard and drowning and everything else. So he crosses over that ford, and he took them and set them over the brook, and he said over that he had, and Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the break of day. Now, every time I ever read that story, I'm thinking about him and that man in a headlock, wrestling around, falling all over the ground. And that could very well be what was going on here. But in my mind, when you wrestle with somebody, you're striving and pushing and jerking and trying to get an advantage over them, trying to get them to flip or trip or whatever, so that you can throw them down and pin them or whatever. And he says that these two men wrestled. And we're going to get to who these two men are, but this man and him wrestled until the break of day. Now, I used to be a pretty good wrestler, but I don't think I could wrestle all night long. That's some serious wrestling. That's some straining. That's some pushing and jerking right there. That's every muscle and every fiber in your body would have to just be totally strained out to hold a grip on somebody that long all night long. But it says that this man and Jacob wrestled all night. Until the break of day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, talking about the one that came to him, when he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Now, we understand that this person, eventually we're going to get to this, is going to be an angel of the Lord, or possibly most likely Jesus Christ himself wrestling with Jacob, because Jacob is the patriarch of Israel. And so we see them wrestling, and it's not that Jesus couldn't whip Jacob. We know he would have that kind of power. But it's the fact that he would cause Jacob to have to wrestle all night long, to contend with him all night long. And this wrestling not only was in physical strength face to face, because it says he saw God face to face at the end of this thing, but they was like in prayer. A while ago we heard him prayer, here's the promises, here's this, here's that, but now he's in contention face to face with God, locked in a headband, locked in a grip with God, and he refuses to let God go, and he says, I will not let you go until you bless me. He says he wrestled and locked up. That's the way we sometimes, I don't know if I've ever been quite that far along, I know I've done some praying sometime, but I've never remember getting locked up with God all night long in a face-to-face contention with him, saying, God, I need you. God, I need a blessing. God, I need some help. God, I need some strength. This is what Jacob is doing right now. He is praying and wrestling with God, face-to-face in a grip with God, saying, I won't let you go till you bless me. Boy, if we could pray like that. I won't let you go till you bless me. I won't let you leave me, Lord, until I know what's going on is going on, that I have peace with what's happening, till I know I've been blessed, till I know that you have called me out from where I am and I have been changed. That's what I tell people all the time. If you think that you understand what being saved is about, you think you're lost, then I wouldn't quit crying out to God. I'd be like Jacob right here. I'd be locked up with God. I'd want to make sure I cried out to God till I knowed I was saved. If I felt like he was drawing and I just couldn't get a hold of it, I'd cry out until I couldn't cry out no more. That doesn't say God changes his mind. But if I just thought that God was dealing with me, I understood the fear of God, I would get a hold of him and I wouldn't let go till he saved me. We're not going to get through this tonight, are we? So, mark that spot where we at. 23, 24, 23. Mark that spot and we'll be start there next Wednesday. Because if I'm not mistaken, there's about, we've got about 20 more verses, 10 more, 15 more verses just in this chapter. So mark that spot, because we ain't through wrestling with God for a while yet. We got a few more verses. So, Brother Keith, would you dismiss us, please?